much that we should leave, even, you know, whatever. My name is Christian Bethune. I used to work at a, or I used to, once upon a time I was a CMS student here at MIT, and then I went away, I went to EA, went to Harmonix, a couple of places, and now for the last 2 years I've been at 30th Studio, which is a startup just outside of Maynard. We're making a big thing though, coming out. I literally threw these slides together today as we were here, so forgive their, I'm probably going to break every single rule of a visual presentation that's possible. That's my, actually my goal. I'm going to have black text and white background, and there's huge blocks of it because it's pretty much what I was going to say. So
that's, you already have points because you're the only person to use PowerPoint.
I know, which is kind of terrifying. So, hey, there we go.
This was
literally, this is actually largely based on the talk I gave, but this is my GDC 2006 talk. This is what it is. And it's actually a much prettier poster, that version of all these, where a lot of this information came from. But in any case, so what I'm going to run through real quickly is for game primarily the idea was for game designers. There's all this like AI learning stuff out there that people don't really know about. They know it kind of exists. They don't really know what it is. They don't really know how to use it. Pretty much, and so this is going to be a crash course in that. What is that? How can designers kind of, you know, request from engineering and so on and so forth to use this stuff out there, and what can we do with it? My background was I did my master's here in computer science with some folks, the Bruce Palmer, who's not there anymore. It's now Blue Fang. I don't think anybody from Blue Fang. So that's pretty much it. Bruce Blumberg.
Okay, yeah. They did the character animation for the Media Lab, right?
That was synthetic characters for the Media Lab. I was consulting with them a little bit, and computer media studies and a couple of places. And there's also some stuff. If anyone wants more details on this, there's actually some stuff I wrote for AI Game Programming Wisdom Volume 3 from Charles River Press. Has much more detail than I can let talk about. Anyway, so some kind of interesting crash course for game designers on this AI learning stuff too. Like I said, the giant box text, everything else is doing PowerPoint space right here. Yeah.
Sorry, this is AI learning?
Yeah.
Oh. Did anyone else think this was viral?
No, we spent time with 4 o'clock. Oh, no, not 3 o'clock.
Sorry. Yeah. If you want to leave now, we can all stare at you and watch you leave.
I'm going to go take a quick look. Sorry.
I've got to go somewhere.
I left the oven on. So anyway, in my opinion, I worked both as an engineer and as a designer on various projects. AI is that kind of where engineering and design really intersect the most, in my opinion. It's really that area that, you know, a designer really gets off and really with an engineer and say, what can we do here, what's possible, how can we do things we want to achieve, so on and so forth. As it is here, it is very important, given that, for designers that want to do something new, and I want to do this kind of new crazy thing over here, to really kind of understand, they don't understand the details of how the AI works, but understand what the pros and cons and pieces are, kind of what's out there, at least. The details, kind of, you know, the implementation details can kind of be able to engineer to a large degree. And if I talk too fast or say anything, just seriously just interrupt me because it's meant to be, it's a lecture, but it's meant to be very informal. Learning methods are really one of these things where, again, like I said earlier, you know, people kind of know their stuff out there, we don't really know what it is. Considering learning methods, you have a game, you're kind of considering whether or not you want to use learning methods in your game, whether you want to have something that learns in your game and what's out there to do it. Some possible reasons for that. Wow, so nice and got it. So that's just considering for those that are curious. Why do you want to do it? What's the possible reasons to do it? Well, there's a whole ton of different reasons. I give a couple here: robustness, variability, challenge, believability, optimization. Robustness, in that if you have a game system that learns, that can adapt, it generally is more fault tolerant. You don't go off into little cases that you can, you know, pre-see in advance and kind of have it crumble, fall, fail. Variability, you can have more interesting things that change over time and depth over time. You don't have a little NPC AI that really feels like a robot and feels a little more natural, things like that. Challenge, additionally, you know, once you learn how to look see robot, those little rooms and it's not really more difficult anymore, so you sit there and, you know, shoot it when it comes around the corner or whatever else. You can make things a little bit, adapt a little bit better. And that doesn't have to be, all these things I'm describing doesn't have to be literally some NPC AI in a world. It can be just the game itself. If you're playing the jewels, it can be something as simple as how much you want someone to fluctuate speed, just wait certain things move and build casual games. There's, I mean, I'm reading that mostly as people's imagination, but things they wish they could adapt, things they wish they could learn to kind of, you know, that's what people want to do. Believability, again, that kind of rose a shame, specifically with regards to NPC AIs. It makes more believable characters, it makes more interesting, characters and optimization. There's whole fields of basically media engineering optimizations that can be applied here using internet learns. So and beyond that, as people see via games like Black and White, via games like Nintendog, who would have, look at Nintendog, that kind of came about, that whole idea of being like came about by virtue of being able to make little dogs you can train, make little dogs that are believable, so on and so forth. They use all the various learning methods. So that's what possible gaming. So pitfalls. So there's still lots of risks. A lot of technologies that people use in academic and research AI really aren't used that much in game development, haven't used that much so far. So a lot of engineers and designers are still not really familiar with how to implement them, how to properly use them, so on and so forth. This can add more to your overhead time in terms of development, in terms of and also a lot of things can be computationally kind of intensive. That's a big reason a lot of them haven't been used so far. You're talking about stuff that requires a lot of cycles to really give you good results. But as computers become more fast, as developers promise engineering teams that more and more of cycles are going to go towards things like AI, things like gameplay rather than just graphics, which never really happens. We can potentially hopefully beef up how much that would spend on AI in computation. And also finally, a lot of designers, a lot of people in general, the more, it's very simple for me to make a finite state machine for a little NPC. This NPC goes over there, eats a cookie, comes back here, shoots the player, whatever. And I have a lot of control as a designer over what that NPC does, and I can very tailor that experience very carefully. The second you start to make that NPC a little bit more real or believable or have a mind of its own, the more you succeed that, see that control away to the NPC, and that can be, a good and bad thing. So, the question you have to kind of ask yourself is what is the risk you can do? If anyone has any, I'm going to kind of try to get through the talk pretty quickly. I'm going to leave a lot of time left over to talk about stuff. I apologize if I go pretty quick here. So here's Christian Becklin's golden rule of game AI. I don't know if you've probably written it down somewhere else, but I'm taking credit for it. What you're always trying to do with AI is you're trying to achieve the greatest perception of complexity with the least amount of actual complexity. Okay? So what you're trying to do, you're trying to make a player believe when they're playing this game, holy crap, this AI is incredible, I can't believe he's doing this stuff. And yet actually, behind the scenes, maybe nothing fancy is all the things happening. The best example I can give off how many of this is simply The Sims. The Sims 1, the amount of AI in it was negligible. But the amount of perceived intelligence by players who did not know that was massive. People would, have all sorts of beliefs that, oh my god, my Sim did this, he talked to this, I thought he said this, and it was extremely, extremely simple what was actually happening behind the scenes, but a lot of it was presentation, a lot of it was, and that's kind of what my point here is with game AI in general, the way it's used as a designer. Really what you're dealing with is perceived intelligence rather than actual intelligence. You're not worried about these AI bots, unlike academic research AI, how smart they really are. You're worried about how well perceived people perceive them to be. And so therefore, for anything, and learning is no different, one of the reasons people haven't done this so much so far today is this the best way to do this? Or is there a cheaper, easier way that's going to give you bang for the buck, better results? And then I love this quote, from some stuff right there. Alright, moving on. So another corollary to this is that it's more important to not appear stupid than it is to appear smart. So it's more important that your AI doesn't run off a cliff and kill itself than it is for it to do some genius backflip move that, kicks out three opponents, it helps you out, and gives you a health pack at the same time. I mean, your players will notice those faults much, much, much more. You'll never stand out than people notice the really genius moves. So, what is learning? Now, this is where when you get into conversations with engineers and you guys look, as your designer, here's my summary of learning for everyone that does not know AI stuff. Learning is really pattern recognition plus reaction. Okay, so what that means is learning is being able to recognize a pattern in something in the world, in your game world, in your way the player's doing stuff, and whatever it is, and then kind of deciding how to react to that pattern. okay? The pattern may be every single time the player comes around this corner, they're dying a lot. So something's really wrong here. So what we're going to do is we're actually going to tune down the difficulty right on this time, and that's my reaction. And now, you know, that's what learning basically is. And again, it can be on a macro game level. You can actually change the basic game mechanics if you want. Within some reason, I mean, there's also the design principles there that I'm not going to do too much of those. Or it can be literally like a little NPC AI. Having a reacting pattern to the player does. In many respects, the pattern recognition part can really be more often a more technical challenge. And the reaction part really is becoming more kind of a design challenge. You can find, patterns to people's gameplay. What you do with that information is kind of where the designers go, all right, now what does that mean? And how can I change my stuff for that? And finally, you really, 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 really absolutely must understand the problem domain that you're addressing. If there's anything in the problem domain that you're looking at that you don't fully understand, you will not really be able to really realistically, in any sort of meaningful way, apply learning methods to it. You need to know what the data you're looking at is coming in. Is it player inputs? Is it the keyboard keys they're pressing? Is it literally those keys coming in? Is it the rate they're coming in? Is it, or if it's an RTS, is it the amount of resources they have? Is it the locations on the level? Like, what are my inputs here that I'm trying to learn? If you don't understand further, what is that information's importance? You can shove a ton of information to something, but unless you're kind of able to pick out the important pieces and shove just those pieces into a learning method, you're going to fail. It's just not going to really work. Furthermore, is there even a consistent pattern? It's not really useful to kind of shove a bunch of information to something and say, learn something, if you don't even know the pattern exists. If the person's behaving randomly, then you're not going to really get any results out of this. So you have to know there is some pattern there, and you have to know the important information to discern what pattern is. Finally, if you do that, how do you evaluate effectiveness of, if you have some options now you want to do, how do you say this one's more important than this one? How do you weight those things? How do you say, well, I could make the NPC now jump higher or run faster, but how do I know it's more important? You understand everything that's problem domain. Everything, if you don't understand it yet, keep on iterating on it, keep on thinking about it, keep on tinkering with it, until you feel like you really have a good grasp on the problem you're trying to solve. And that's actually, in my opinion, the things I've seen so far. Oh, so a quick note. My master's thesis is pretty much looking at this in a whole lot of games and talking to game companies and seeing what they did and where it didn't work. Sometimes spilling down a lot of information that's got from different sources. Probably the number one problem I've seen was people trying to put, they didn't really fully understand a problem domain, and they just kind of tried to shove some AI learning method at it and hope it would work out, and it just worked. Because you need to tailor, building work later, you need to tailor your learning method specifically to your problem. So real quick, in general, so this is an editor designer. You're like, I got this task. I wonder if my engineer can make a learning method that can apply this. In general, the answer is yes, if. So you can be formulated numerically. The various attributes can be recognized and well-defined. And a quantitative measure of success can be determined. And regularity is definitely known. So one by one, we formulate numerically, again, using RTS. Numerically can be the positions of the units. Those are numeric places in space. Or the resources. I've got 100 gold and 200 wood. Those are, you've got very, very concrete information there. It's not something vague, it's very, very concrete information. Various actions can be recognized and defined, it kind of goes into what I'm saying. Quantitative measures can be determined. In the RTS, it can be he won, he lost, or it can be he 200 units died, or it can be, whatever. But you need to have a measure of, quality of success there. If you're not sure, you can't just be like, it's good. You need to be very, very concrete. And if you know the pattern, like the last piece, if you have all those things, you can probably apply a learning method to try to find those patterns and react to them and adapt to them. If any of those pieces don't exist, a learning method probably won't work. So again, it's kind of thing I'm saying, things you need. Basically, as a designer, if you can get this information and you can take this to your engineer, more often than not, an engineer on your team, they'll still have to do some backgrounds with that. He'll probably be able to help learn what you can learn. So far, any questions? I know we're really fast.
This is meant to be a different. You can have the slides up on the web.
Sure, I can put it somewhere. Yeah, no problem. Okay, so.
One.
Yep.
What's the learning method in that sense? Is it a trigger that user monitors some kind of data, and then the learning method looks at that and triggers something else, or no?
Okay, so when I'm saying learning method, I mean, people hear all the time about, like, oh, there's neural networks, or oh, there's genetic algorithms, here are these things, they kind of mean, they're kind of AI stuff out there. Really what I'm talking about is that there are some methods from academic research, from academic AI, from research AI, from big corporations, that have kind of said, hey, here's a situation, now give me a behavior that, using all the stuff that's happened in the past, is smart, like you've learned. So I'm going to show you shapes in an order, and the order is always going to be the same. Now, after I show you 20 shapes, I'm going to ask you, what's the next shape I'm going to show you? And the learning method can go, it's probably going to be a orange circle.
You have some kind of record history that you play that history, you analyze that, which creates a learning method, and then you have sort of
a reaction. So basically you have some sort of inputs and you can learn over time. You learn, you know, some sort of inputs into this learning method, not like black box. But again, so talking from an engineering standpoint, that will be the details of which will be implemented by, you know, usually in most development situations. If you're a very small team, like the same person, but in most, you know, big teams, you know, you have designers over here, engineers over here, but they have to work together in this. The designer says, here's what I want to know, you know, hey, Mr. Engineer, can you help me out with? Every single time this guy plays chess, he almost always does the first couple chain moves. Can you tell me in advance what those are? You know, and the engineer can hopefully implement this whole system that goes, hey, here's the best, you know, probably first few moves. Now back to the designer, you pick that and do with that what you want. So does that make more sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there's a whole different methods, which I'm going to talk about actually on the next slide. But I kind of want to give some you know, descriptors for all different methods. And this is the other big thing I noticed when I was talking to the people from different companies, is that there's all different methods out there, neural networks, genetic algorithms, Bayes networks, all sorts of stuff. But they all have different attributes. They're not all created equal. They all really, really, really do have significant pros and cons in each one of them. The problem is a lot of people don't really know what those are and try to kind of misapply them. Here are some of the attributes that all the learning methods kind of have to various degrees. And you kind of need to then look at these attributes, look at your problem, and then figure out what the best learning method for your problem is, given like what's the best match there. And a lot of people just don't do that. A lot of people just kind of use something they've tried to heard, you know, hero, and try to match it. But that is one of the big keys I want to kind of get across here. And again, I know this is a very, very quick talk, and so I'm just kind of throwing out generality there. And one more civics, please email me, please contact me, please whatever. But so here's a couple of basic ones. First one here, supervised, unsupervised, and reinforced learning. That's basically is it something that like a known problem that you can throw tons of, you know, past results at? I can throw 1,000 play sessions to this game at my learning method and then go learn. That would be supervised. It's just terminology. Basically, that's called supervised. I've got tons of past data I can throw at it and tell it to learn. Reinforced kind of drops you into the world on the fly, just go, like, learn as you're playing. You know, you have no background information, you just kind of get through it. And unsupervised is a whole other kettle of fish, and I'm going to give you right now. Online and offline is kind of the same thing there. Actually, these are actually very highly linked. Online learning is happening literally as I'm doing it. I'm playing this game, and it's getting smarter as I'm playing it. Offline is, I've done a simulation, we haven't shipped the game yet, I'm running it off in the corner, and then now, once the game ships, maybe it doesn't even learn anymore, but it learned a bunch from all the play tests I threw at it, and all the simulations I threw at it, and whatever. Ability to generalize. That's another aspect of this. Again, different learning methods are, you know, have different degrees. Some learning methods are really, really good at saying, you know, I've seen a situation kind of like this, and I know what I kind of did, and okay, let's try this. Other ones just mean the exact same situation. You were at this point on the map, you did this action, and I want this result. Very, very specific. And usually ability to generalize is a good thing. You usually want that. Computational efficiency, which is, you know, fairly no-brainer. You know, the faster, the better it is. You know, storage efficiency, some of these need a lot of storage space. You know, they need a lot of hardware space or RAM, whatever. Input data loss requirements. Some of these need a lot of input. So again, like I was talking about, all that sample data. Some of these are thousands and thousands and thousands of test cases to even get basically smart. Some of them can get kind of pretty smart with just a little bit of input. You know, this starts to learn pretty quickly. Input data type requirements. Some means some different learning methods work really well with different types of data. Some work really well with, you know, simply with streaming numbers. Some work really well with like, here's a color, you know, here's a text tag, this is blue, this is orange. This is kind of what kinds of data you're working with. Prior knowledge, that kind of goes into how much you know at the background of what you're trying to learn. What is a hockey game? I'm making a hockey game. I know a lot about how hockey plays out already, and I can kind of push a lot of that already into the learning system to kind of bias the way the learning system works. I know that, you know, people have to pass, and they need to shoot, and the way passing is kind of a good way to be passing to some extent, and stuff like that. Interpretability, some of the learning black box systems, once you learn that system, it's kind of useful to be able to now as a designer read and say, so what did it learn? Oh, that's what it thinks it's trying to do. Okay. Some of them are very, very hard to interpret and read like that. It's just a bunch of numbers. Like, I don't know what that means. Some of them give you very, very specific instructions. Being like, if the hockey player is really close, then I shoot, you know. And people either use some or just more easy to use than others. And it's the same learning methods. So these are all these kind of like attributes that different learning methods have. Now, I don't seem daunting, because it is a big giant list of stuff. But it's really important that you try to implement something for your team or whatever, that you kind of know what's the best match for my problem. If you have a problem and you have some prior knowledge, you know, use a learning method that really plays off that, you know, to your advantage. But if you don't, you know, you don't want to do that, so on and so forth. Any questions? So here's a couple of my favorite ones, and a couple of ones that are most popular. I'm not going to go into too much detail on them right now, except to say that the previous slide, this is exactly it. Here's six right here. Given the previous slide, each one of these six kind of fits some of those attributes in a different way. Huge number of, like, really, really hard to read. Journal charts are very hard to read, and they require a lot of input sample test cases. But once you get that, they're fairly good at generalizing. They're fairly good at saying, you know, I remember, well, the ship was kind of configured kind of like this, and he turned left, well, I probably want to turn left then. And so that's what, you know, so there's an example of pro and con neural networks. Just to the next one, decision trees. Decision trees give you a very readable result, because they give you a tree where it's like, if it was blue, then I'm here. If it was red, then I'm here. And then if it was green, I'm here. And you get a very, very readable result of how it learned, where to put, you know, where to throw the ball to which hoop or whatever. And to go, you know, some of these can learn on the fly very quickly. That's what reinforcement learning is really, really good at. You can kind of give it no prior knowledge, no nothing, drop into the world, and it'll kind of be able to adapt on the fly pretty well. However, then, you know, again, pros and cons. So I'm not going to go into any details. Anyone wants more information, maybe, but,
yeah. Other than that, can you go with that evolutionary method?
Yeah, okay, so evolutionary methods are basically what you do, so real quick, you pretty much create a bunch of test case examples of, you kind of just randomly say, you know what, I'm going to walk two paces to the left, shoot to my right, and then do a flip, or whatever. You know, and here's a little, you know, NPC in a world. I'm not trying to, you know, solve it or problem. This is a test example. And what you can do is take 100 different possibilities of what you're going to do. Okay, this one does this, this, and this. This one does this, and this. You create them all randomly. Okay, then what you do is you try them all out, and you get back some sort of feedback, some sort of fitness of how well they did it. Well, this guy got, and suppose you're trying to use score points. So that's your goal. You know, it's, well, you always have to keep score those points. Okay? You take, of all those 100 random ones, you take the, say, 10 that did the best. You take those, you kind of copy them a bunch, and kind of mutate them a bunch. You just kind of make them all small pieces of them. And you keep on doing that cycle.
What's the method of mutation?
There's a whole
bunch of stuff. Some guys in there changing stuff?
Or? No, so this is all automated. So this is what they do a lot is some of the, for example, genetic algorithms, they use a big bit string, where every was just 1 0 1 0 1 0 1 0, where each one of those sections of bits is some sort of a piece of data, piece of information. So maybe the first block is, suppose it's literally like a turn-based strategy, okay? And I can build, I can attack, I can flee, you know, whatever, or I can check my resources, or, you know, there's as much action. Maybe the first block of numbers is, you know, do action one. Second block of numbers is, you know, action two, second block of numbers. So or just in terms of the sequence, you just kind of take that data and you kind of basically apply a random mutation to it, which is kind of just kind of flip random bits in there. And you get a slightly different set of behavior. Does that make sense?
No. It's not that. I just didn't understand how the mutations were going to be like what you're saying.
There's actually a whole bunch of different ways. So for genetic algorithms, like I said, big bit string, they kind of look at it literally like DNA. and it'll do things like randomly mutate individual bits, and also take two individuals, that's called a population, that's your mutual bit, I'll take two individuals in population, and they'll cross over chunks of them, and copy kind of pieces into each other. And all you're just kind of doing this stuff, and you just kind of like reapply it, that's all out, now take your best 10 again, mutate those, copy them out, reapply them, and so that way you're kind of finding the best individual amongst lots and lots and lots and lots of variations. So that's what an evolutionary is. Some of this stuff is used a lot in search engines to kind of, I'll type in a word, but it may be something that, you know, is better for what I'm looking for than something else. So on and so forth. I can go into more details on this. I'm going to get more questions later. So these are all the common AI stuff. Now, last section here was basically just designing for learning. So now you've got all this stuff, you know, here's the reason which I can learn. I can learn if something, you know, that meets these conditions. I can learn if it's, you know, regular, if there's some sort of pattern there somewhere, if I can tell some sort of reaction to that pattern I want to do, if it's numerical, if it's, you know, if I've got hard numbers I can work with. And if I got that, and I figured out now, like, my learning problem domain, it's got these problems, and I figured out now the learning method that matches those problems. So now I'm all set. So now, what do you do next? Okay, so my big recommendation to you is take it slow. Like, seriously, seriously, take it slow. Don't try to build your entire team around some big learning method thing that you don't really fully understand that's never been tried before. My bigger recommendation is kind of to augment and modify things you've already done with learning stuff than to just outright replace them. If, say, for example, you're not sure whether this player, you're trying to compose a team of players for some sort of, say, Super Smash Brothers or something like that, and I'm trying to get a team of players to all play against the player, and I want to learn over time what the player finds most enjoyable to fight against or something like that, I wouldn't throw out whatever your current method for finding that team of players is. I would kind of say, I would kind of add whatever you're doing for at first, it has an additional bias onto that. Saying like, well, here's a premium players, but my learning method over here says you might also really like this one. So I'm going to add that one in too as one of the five, something like that. I'd seriously give that recommendation off the at first. If it turns out it works really well, you can like use it more and more, you can use it in place with other stuff, but for initial stuff, I would highly recommend, you know, just augmenting and modifying and using stuff. If you're working on RTS, don't throw out your RTS AI right away, but maybe start using learning methods to kind of bias which units you make sometimes or something like that. Using your own AI type of methods, biasing machines and, you know, training systems and all that good stuff. The other thing is also have a backup plan. If you have some sort of parsing dependent on learning system, have some sort of underlying net there in case your learning system fails. That is maybe just a quantity machine. So that says, if your learning system for whatever reason chokes, just at least shoot randomly, you know, or something like that. So this is just something that doesn't freeze, so something doesn't, you know, and that's actually something that a lot of people surprisingly often forget. That's true with everything. I mean, everything you should always have backup sometime. When if this part doesn't work out and you're running in real time, crap, what do I do? Go to plan B. And that's basically good engineering, in my opinion. So almost done here. A couple other tips for in terms of using these in terms of design. So here's an interesting thing. Go ahead and tell your players that you're AI learning. Okay. Here's something that's kind of surprising. They actually went to this research study done where the guy made this really fancy Pac-Man AI system where like the ghosts were made by really, really smart neural networks that learned like that. And they did a couple of experiments. Worked in the experiments they did. But they set down players and they said, we're just using regular adult Pac-Man AI and played it. And they said, you know, okay, write down scores of your enjoyability and how much you loved it. They get another thing and they said, this is using a super fancy AI, it learns from your mistakes, like super intelligent, you throw out the twin computers over at NASA, you wouldn't believe it's amazing. And if you write down scores of their enjoyment, they love it so much more. Like, and it'd be the exact same AI and it'd be amazing. So it seems cheap, it seems easy, I'm actually not kidding. It does have a significant impact on people's perceived enjoyment. If they think they're playing, now here's the thing, if they think they're playing against a smart opponent, even if it's smarter and they defeat it, they feel better. So they feel smarter. It seems natural, seems obvious, but it's surprisingly effective.
Maybe they imagine that the opponent is better, and that fear the opponent that actually are.
Yes, that's true, that's possible. The thing is, it's not actually better, it's probably fine, you know, so, yeah. So,
I was just going to say, like, how much of that do you think is like, the AI being smart, or just doing something that is unpredictable? Or not necessarily unpredictable, but not what you would expect. Like, that's one of the things, this is not a really good example, because the AI in beer is actually good,
yeah.
Right? But what struck me about it, and what I take away from that play experience, is more that the enemies, because I've played, you know, first-person shooter before, it's like the enemies would do things that I wouldn't expect them to do.
Sure.
And so that became, you know, more interesting to me than, you know, than me thinking, oh, wow, like, they're doing some really smart stuff.
No,
so maybe part of it is just, like, sort of not necessarily making them, like, super intelligent, but maybe, like, saying, like, hey, you know, typically the player would expect the enemy to do this, so don't do that, do this instead.
Right. No, that is definitely true. I mean, that's actually, you can learn if you want to. But learn is what the player usually does, and I want to surprise them, so do this other thing. Which, if you just have something that shows them their growth automatically during single time, it doesn't happen, you know. So, yeah, no, I actually agree strongly. I think that actually is very powerful and useful. I'm not sure if that's, I agree. So, what I was going to say is, into the AI capabilities. So, as I said before, yes, always make the player aware of what was learned. Don't have your AI learn stuff and have the player not realize what was learned and how it was learned and why it was learned. I'll give you a quick example, which is in Black and White, one of the games that did use that significant amount of learning. One of the common complaints people had was, well, my little creature does this thing all the time now, and I don't know why it does that, and I don't want to do that, I want to do something else. So there was not a good transparency as to, you took this action and you scolded your creature for doing this thing. Now it doesn't do this thing anymore. There wasn't that good road feedback to the player. If your AI is learning something, you want to be clear why it's learning it, like where that information is coming from, what the AI is learning, and what it's learning. It needs to be surprisingly shockingly transparent. If it's all fit, you know, fades away behind you, players actually get kind of frustrated. Yeah, it can be okay for your NPC AI or whatever it is, for your learning thing to make mistakes and be dumb sometimes, as long as the player understands why it's doing that. Because that actually can be part of the game player. Like, you know, your player can kind of like, you know, trick the NPC into doing something dumb, but he knows why it did that, and because I kind of trained it to doing this thing otherwise, you know. As long as the system comes, it's very well advertised.
Does it matter much if it's the player trying to train an AI that's hypothetically on their side, as it was with Black and White, or if you're training enemies that you're fighting?
Right. That comes down to, you know, the game design for that system.
Would people be miffed if they're playing StarCraft against a theoretically learning AI, and the learning AI is doing weird things and you don't know why?
Well, that's exactly it. You want to make sure that the player knows why it's learning the things that it's learning. If it's ever uncertain, why is it always building all those turrets? I never trained it to build turrets, whatever. If that's ever unclear, that's when players are going to be frustrated. If it's obvious as to, well, dude, you showed it a million times, hey, build turrets in this situation, and now building turrets, if that's very clear to the player, they go, oh, it's building turrets because I trained it to, you know, then that's where the pressure's on. As far as enemies, I mean, that's a whole other kind of kettle of fish, and again, that's something to kind of a project specific kind of design situation, so.
It was more like, I'm playing StarCraft, and I've got this ally, and he's building turrets. Well, okay, sure. If my enemy is suddenly building turrets, and I don't know why, maybe
it's
my enemy realized that it's not building air force, or whatever. Am I going to be missed if I don't understand why my enemy keeps thinking I'm going to have air force when I didn't build one?
Maybe not. I mean, that doesn't seem a nebulous answer. But I mean, in certain situations, if the AI just seems better, seems cooler, smarter, that's probably not that thing. If you can make it seem, as far as your product goes, if you're trying to sell this game, and you can be like, check this out, this is cool, our game is doing this thing, and it's learning from your, and it's very obvious and clear, people might, like, again, with that thing I was saying earlier, might think the AI is now smarter, they might kind of respect it more, might kind of have more drive enjoyment from it. But that's, again, that's kind of a case-by-case basis. But yeah, I mean, it can keep moving away. So last two quick slides, and then we'll do something. Players should avoid your weaknesses. Like I said, all the AI learning methods themselves each have weaknesses. Don't try to like fight against those things. Just kind of try to downplay. Like, just, you know, if the method you're trying to use is not good at X, don't try to force it. like just kind of try to work with the strengths and kind of like, you know, see if your design is possible to mitigate those weaknesses are. Yeah, character design is a really good way to do this in particular. Again, these are, you know, AI compatible NPCs. Look at R2-D2. R2-D2 doesn't need to have the most sophisticated learning in the world and like that compared to a human. If you want to have a human in the game in R2-D2, I would put learning in R2-D2 for a human. It's just simple, you know, projection in terms of what people are expected to do.
A really good example of a game that does that is Nintendo, which has AI learning built in, but because it's a dog and it messes up, that feels like it's part of it. So they actually, like, messing up is fine with that AI because it's supposed to have, it's a dog. It doesn't always listen to you. It doesn't pay attention.
I'll probably say something different from now, you know, 20, 30 years from now. But for now, putting it, you know, on R2-D2 or on a caveman that can't speak and can only grunt and wave his arms like that, you know, something where it's a more simplistic thing, people will, you know, can extrapolate much more. Yeah, and people learning whatever it is, if you get a fun part of the game itself, like I said, a lot of games actually require a lot of iteration before they learn, like in terms of actually playing the game. But if you build that into the game play itself, it may not be bad. And last thing, learning methods are good ways to find solutions. You're trying to find a solution rather than, they're not a solution themselves. You're trying to find a way to, well, I want to do this thing, I want to do whatever, I'm trying to find a reaction to the situation. But the learning method is not fixed in and of itself. You can't just put it in and figure out, well, now we're all set. Like, it's really how you use the learning method that's the solution itself. That sounds incredibly nebulous. There's a lot more on this, but I kind of chopped off. And that's pretty much it. So now, so that's long short of it. Does anyone have any questions? You got like another couple minutes here or so? Or?
We got the, technically we're done. But we have 15 before the next thing.
All right. So if anyone's got any questions at all, I'm happy to answer them. Sorry, I have another one question.
So what would be a good entry point for as a relatively entry level coder getting into AI? What's available? But I mean, should it be the first, you know, AI wisdom book or?
Oh, that's what you're saying. The first book I really liked, was just in terms of AI in general, was a guy named Brian. It's AI Game Engine Programming or something like that. Or Game AI Engine Programming, so something like that. But it was a Charles Gerber Press book about 4 years ago. Actually, maybe even longer. Maybe 4 or 5 years ago. It was AI Game Engine Programming, and it was just like game design. There was a whole ton of books that came out for a certain period of time, and to be honest, the first 10 were all crap. It was kind of the land rush of everyone trying to get something out there.
Resources. Yeah. I don't know what's good.
So all the first 5 or 6 books that came out, and just like historically in terms of Amazon, were all junk. That was the first one. I was like, no, I'm second. The reason I liked that in particular was that it was kind of divided into 2 sections. The first section said, here's all these genres of games. First person shooters, RTSs, you know, whatever, real-time strategy, turn-based strategy, MMOs, RPGs, everything, you know, sports games, racing games. What are each of them commonly doing in terms of AI? What do racing games usually do? You know, what AI methods do they usually use? What do first person shooters usually use? And I kind of went through that. The second half of the book was kind of like, and then you just talked about methods by that genre. So I have to go kind of just go into more detail about cumulatively all those methods one by one. So here's phonics agencies, here's scripts planning systems, here's whatever else. So I really like that book. I did a decent job of actually talking about the game industry. A lot of your books kind of just, they just kind of like, here's some AI stuff. Oh yeah, you can use this in a game, I guess. You know, it just wasn't that great. Or they're research programming books almost. The AI wisdom books are good for specific topics. Like, once you kind of understand AI generally, the 3 or 4 game AI wisdom books are good where it's like, I really want to know more about how do I select this target in a 2-person fighting game? Or how do I select which move to use in a 2-person fighting game? It's a very specific, problem. They're good at doing stuff like that. And you can usually look at people's comments, like online or whatever, but all of them, they'll have like tons of articles. So you'll have like literally things where it's like, in the Sims, how do we decide, where I want to walk or whatever, like very good. And they're also advising you, here's a tap on your problems, here's sports game specific problems, like how to play to do a football game or whatever. So that would be the two kind of like one-two combo for the men, I guess.
Cool.
Thank you.
Are there any like generic solutions for learning methods I can buy?
So,
like just sort of
right.
Setting up this black box where I have some parameters that I put in?
Right. So yes and no. There's two big AI middleware companies for games, or AI middleware solutions. One is AI Implant, and one is Kinogen, or Kinax by Kinogen, Kinogen, something like that. It's kind of it. So Kinax and AI Implant are the two big middleware solutions. They each have some learned stuff. It's kind of a little bit black boxy, you'll see how they work. But yeah, you can kind of plug some things in. I've never personally used them that much. I really can't tell you. I'd say if you want more, you can go check them out. Other than that, I mean, the thing is that
can you open source?
What?
Something
so that's what I'm going to say. Like I was saying, because you also recommend it, and you want to use methods that best matches your problem, I actually wouldn't recommend a generic. There's not a generic thing, just plug in there and we'll all work. That's fundamentally the problem most people have so far. So this one's good at this thing, but not this thing,
Well, I'm saying is if you know
that your problem space, if you know like the problem you're trying to deal with, I'm trying to think of the next play in football game. And these parameters, you know, are kind of like the issue. What's the best learning method out there for me to use in this situation? If you can do that, then there's tons of open source, tons of open source network stuff out there, tons of open source evolutionary stuff out there, tons of open source being networks out there. You can go to SourceForge or go to wherever and kind of grab something, kind of plug it in, if you already know that this is kind of the best place for your game. But that's what I'm kind of saying, that you kind of need to do a little bit of prep work to kind of figure out, here's my problem in terms of all, here's the attributes of a good solution. Now, of those, I should use a neural network. Now you can go and grab a neural network from somewhere. So you don't necessarily need to implement neural networks from scratch.
Also, if they pay off to take a step back and ask what problem you're really trying to solve, if you say, oh, I need a learning method for the AI for my first-person shooter, ask yourself why you're writing an AI for a first-person shooter at all instead of going to Kinax and buying one.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So some of these problems are well and truly solved, and throwing AI learning method at it is completely the wrong answer because you can just go by the solution instead of doing all the
If you're
stuff.
Like pathfinding, there's no point to be using
it. Go buy a pathfinding.
Yeah, go buy an HDR.
I asked this question more like in a theoretical
because,
but I think a lot of the times in games you have like these problems that have been solved in different ways by engineers, you all need to sort of pick them and then reuse them.
And that's exactly it, because in terms of academic AI research, in terms of like research, in terms of like, you know, I have this factory that makes these widgets and I have these machines that are managing the widgets, or in terms of like commercial and industrial and academic setting, there's been tons and tons of learning methods stuff done. Games really aren't using any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so there's basically some research over here, and tons of research done on neural networks. You can probably go buy, you know, neural network, you know, solution, you know, for someone, or you can go buy there and plug it into your game, but people don't really know what's out there, even, and that's kind of where the barrier
is. And odds are it's too complex for
us. A lot of it's overkill, a lot of it's, so it has requirements that are beyond what I mean. You know, maybe it can't run in real time, or something like that, so, you know. But, any questions?
Do you have, like, you probably have a good overview of the historic development of use of that stuff. What are the first games that used those things learning?
Oh man, I have a whole bunch of my room that I haven't played in years. So I'll tell you the first really big games that really made use of it that didn't work. Completely failed miserably. Black and White was surprisingly not that long. I mean, it's not even that old, but it was the first game that really actively used more than one actually learning method in the game successfully. If you go way, way back when, there was a bunch of like very early VGA games that kind of used some various learning stuff. There was actually a game by something called Anarch, which was literally you get control. It was a little robot thing, and he went around an environment, and it was called Galapagos, the name of the game. And it was meant to be a, you know, reference to evolution, whatever. And you just control a little robot. You're training your robot from the start of the game to some safety area after many, many levels, right? So you're going through these levels. Each level has dangers. I mean, the robot gets a thing that will explode, or it doesn't jump over this pit, whatever else. Now, the interesting thing about that game was you didn't control the robot, you control the environment. So you kind of like move stuff, and you basically can tell the robot like, that's good or that's bad. You told it's bad, it might turn around and try to go the opposite direction. But you didn't explicitly tell it to go left or right. You said yes or no, kind of. and you can also teach them just kind of like bouncing environment a little bit. So what happens is you could be walking your pit, and you kind of like bounce the environment, and the robot would go to jump and jump over the pit. And what happened was the robot would learn over time, and it keeps replaying through the level. And every time I replay the level, it probably go a little bit further, and a little bit further, and a little bit further, until finally you could be doing. So there were some early experiments with that. It wasn't a big game, didn't sell well. But it does exist. So you can actually download it, I think, for free now, off of like, I don't know, probably $100 or something like that. All right, if anyone wants to contact me, there's my email address. And I'll get the slides to Gary if you want that. Yep.